Welcome back to the Jen Gottlieb Show. Today, my special guest is Matthew Hussey. Matthew is a New York Times bestselling author, speaker, and coach specializing in confidence and relational intelligence. His YouTube channel is number one in the world for love life advice with over 500 million views. And just so you guys know, Matthew's content, I think, helped me find the love of my life and get married. He writes a weekly newsletter and is the host of the podcast Love Life with Matthew Hussey. Hussey provides monthly coaching to members of his private community at lovelifeclub.com. And over the past 15 years, his proven approach has inspired millions through authentic, insightful, and practical advice that not only enables them to find love, but also feel confident and in control of their own happiness. Today, we are going to get into a conversation about his brand new book, Love Life, and I'm really excited for you to listen. Before we dive into the show, I wanted to give you a quick heads up about something super exciting that I want to invite you to. Our next event, Build Your Brand Live, is happening on May 17th, 18th, and 19th in Atlanta. Build Your Brand Live is going to be epic this year. We have some of the greatest speakers in the world, including Jamie Kern Lima, Trent Shelton, Jesse Itzler, myself, Chris Winfield, my amazing husband, and we're going to be teaching you everything you need to know to build a profitable brand online. So if you're building a brand, building a business, creating content, you definitely want to be there. And if you're just curious about where to start when it comes to being seen and building a brand online, you definitely want to be in this room with 500 other amazing people to connect with, network with, and have a hell of a lot of fun with. So don't hesitate. The link is in the show notes where you can get your ticket today. I hope to see you there. And now, here's the episode. Here we go, introducing Matthew Hussey.
Welcome to the Jen Gottlieb Show.
Matthew Hussey, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jen.
All right, I'm really excited, and I told you before we were rolling that I was going to save this for everybody to listen to when I say it to you. But you don't know this, and you definitely played a huge part in me finding the love of my life. You have no idea that the work that you were doing was helping me in such a massive way. Because I was that girl watching your videos and consuming your content when I was single, and people were ghosting me, and I was dealing with all the bullshit that you talk about. And you helped me to, I'll tell you just a little tiny story of like how your content helped me. And you're going to be like, oh my God, I'm so proud of you. I hope you're proud of me. When I first met my husband, Chris, I met him for a walk in the park. I came home from that date and I remember writing in my journal, like I was so excited and I was going to do the thing that I always do with guys where it's like, oh, he's the guy I'm going to marry and like drop everything and do everything that he says. And like, if he wants me to go out with him tomorrow, I'm going to cancel all my plans and do everything. And I'm going to pretend that I like all of the things that he likes. And I was like, no. Matthew would tell me not to do that. So I wrote down in my journal, I met this cool guy, but I'm just going to keep doing me. And then Chris reached out and he was like, do you want to go on a date on Saturday or do you want to go out on Saturday? I was like, I'm actually busy. I have plans. And I turned him down. I was like, how about Sunday? And I really think that that move was a really empowering move. And it was he found that really attractive that I was just like, no, like I'm busy. I've got stuff to do. And it was really your trainings that helped me to empower myself to be able to come at my relationship with that confidence. And so I want to thank you. I think it's very full circle and weird and wild that we're sitting here together and you're crazy on my show.
It's but crazy.
Your work, this book, helped me. So I'm so thrilled that I get to introduce you to my community and my listeners because you're the real deal, my friend.
Thank you, Jen. What an honor to get. I'm so glad that I didn't hear that until now. Like you could have told me before and, you know, because I know we've been in touch about doing this show, but I'm so glad you waited because it's so lovely. It's almost crazy that we haven't met until now, knowing that. So I'm so happy for you, firstly, that you found what you were looking for. And I'm really touched that my work was a part of that.
It's so important, I think, for us to share when somebody really helps us, because we were just talking about this, the process of writing a book. It's like you put your heart and soul into a book and then you're doing all the marketing and a lot of it can get away from us, like the why, the reason. And I wanted to just sit down and be like, listen, what you're doing is like really important. And I'm sitting here living, breathing results of a lot of the work that you did. So thank you.
Well, thank you for sharing that. It's a gift to me because, we live in a world where online, it's just numbers on a screen. And you it's 100,000, 5 million people could have watched a video. And it's very hard to like think of those as individual people all watching a video all over the world. It's too much. You can't fathom that. But to have one person in front of you being like, the course of my life changed because of this work, it puts things into perspective, because you go, well, that's all. I could probably stop now.
No, please don't stop. Please don't. All right. So, yeah, this is goes.
That wasn't the intended effect.
Okay, good. No, no, no. We want you to keep creating more content. I love the acronym HOPE, help one person every day. So whenever I'm creating content, I think about that one person on the other side of the phone that you don't even realize is watching that really needed to hear from you.
Yeah.
And I was that person. So
one person every day. I love that.
Yeah.
I
so really hopefully like we're that. Talking to that one person right now about your book. Okay. So read this book, listen to a ton of content that's newer, and this is what every single person that is single and in a relationship needs right now. And I want to talk about all the pieces of the book, but the one piece that really, really, really hit home for me in a really big way was the fact that self-love needs a rebrand. Mm. And a lot of people ask me about self-love, and I love your view of self-love, because when I was single, people would say to me all the time, well, Jen, you just need to love yourself. And when you start loving yourself, you'll attract the love of your life. I'm like, I think I love myself. And I know that a lot of people are listening to this thinking the same thing. Like, everyone's telling me to just love myself, but how do I do that? Do I love myself? I don't know. Sometimes I don't. And your view of self-love in this book is, I've never heard it before. Mm. And I want you to share that with the audience.
Yeah. Well, I sympathize with anyone who struggles with self-love, because I struggled with it for years. I didn't know what people really meant by it. It just felt like a bumper sticker to me.
Yeah.
And it was so ubiquitous. It was everywhere online and Instagram and places where people give motivational advice. And I just thought, what does that actually mean to love yourself? And it can't be, you know, it can't be a bubble bath and candles. Like me having a bubble bath and candles didn't, and laying there, I didn't think, you know what, I've really figured out my self-worth issues in this tub. It was like, for me, I just went, okay, what next? You know, I still beat myself up relentlessly. I still wake up in the morning, every morning, in a place of deficit, thinking that I have to now somehow go and earn love and earn my kind of, you know, kill myself working and trying to do things so that I can go to bed at night, at the end of the night, almost just exhausted.
When was this? When you were feeling this?
My whole life.
Your whole life?
My whole life. It's been the story of my life, is an inner tyrant who shames me, who can't let go of mistakes, who doesn't forgive me for my transgressions, whether they were a year ago or 10, that is constantly telling me I'm not living up to some ideal, or that, you know, even the basic things, like like telling me I'm not a good person, you know, like just the story of my life. And that voice has always been there. And so when I think many people can relate to that voice.
I'm so glad you're sharing this, because there's probably not a single person listening that can't relate.
Yeah.
I know I relate, and I think it comes in highs and lows sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I want to go back to, while we're talking about this, a moment in time in your life that really actually interests me, because when I was like really consuming your content as a single girl trying to get into a relationship was kind of that time when you were just starting your business, and you talked about it in the book in the introduction. You said that I looked like the perfect guy to date during this time, and I was teaching everybody how to date, but I was probably the worst guy to date in the entire world.
Yeah,
so is this certainly like the height of it?
Certainly one of the more dangerous guys to date. I think there are guys who are really obviously bad to date. And
you were
like,
not obviously bad.
I wasn't obviously bad to date. And that makes someone a special kind of dangerous, because you kind of, you know, at least with like just a genuine asshole, you kind of know what you're getting.
Right. But you were definitely, you didn't look like that. You looked like
the
perfect. No, and
by the way, I wasn't. I've always been someone who loves people.
Yes.
And I've always had a very big, kind heart. But that didn't stop me from being selfish, and it didn't stop me from not knowing how to make myself happy, let alone someone else. And when you don't know how to make yourself happy and you don't know how to find peace and in your own life, you know, a confused person is a dangerous person, because you can, as a confused person, you can waste a lot of time for one person or many people. So, you know, I count myself among the confused people in life who didn't know how to make myself happy, couldn't figure out what I really wanted, dated like an addict, who was like, you know, on this roller coaster of highs and excitement and romance, and, you know, didn't really know what a real relationship would look like for me, or that there was a different kind of feeling that I would have to start to get used to if I wanted a real relationship, and a different kind of vulnerability that I'd have to exhibit to be in a real relationship. You know, and it goes back to that self-love point that, you know, I wasn't vulnerable in the way that I am today for a very long time, because I was always playing this sort of heroic figure that I thought was the lovable side of me. You know, and every guy has their version of that, whatever they think is the most strong and, you know, masculine and exciting and sexy version of themselves that they put forward. And, you know, I think it's a very common thing among men for us to be deeply afraid that underneath all of that is a sort of scared, spotty adolescent boy who's insecure that he doesn't match up. And, you know, and I didn't really bring that part of me forward, because I was, you know, I didn't feel that part of me was really lovable. So, you know, I wasn't vulnerable enough for people to really truly know me in any case. So that, like, that's why for me self-love was such an important thing to understand, because, you know, the things I write about in this book are things that I myself have had to wrestle with. They weren't one-time epiphanies. They were things I truly for years wrestled with and tried to get to the bottom of. And self-love was one of those things, because I thought, if everyone keeps telling me self-love is the answer here, what's a version of self-love that really makes sense to me? And I would step in, you know, I've been running a retreat program for 16 years of my life, a six-day event. And this program has been a place where I've, like, every year I come back to show my workings for everything that I've been doing for myself and working on and helping people with. And, you know, it's like I come for 6 days and I present, like, here's my, you know, here's my process, my best process today for us being able to go out there and be the person we want to be and have the confidence we want to have and have the, you know, the worthiness that we want to have and heal our patterns. And the thing that I used to step on this stage and ask every time was, I would step in front of the audience and I would say, is loving yourself important? And people would say, of course, so important. It's the most important.
Right.
And I'd say, okay, so why should you love yourself? And that was usually a moment that stumped the audience. Mm-hmm. Because asking why, I needed to know why. And I was like, probably you do too, because I think we all have a smart kind of skeptical part of our brain that's going, I'm going to need more than the bumper sticker, more than the platitude. You need to give me a logic that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. So in a world where we feel like we don't match up so often, why should we love ourselves? And people would say, because we deserve it. And I'd say, okay, that sounds like exchanging one platitude for another. Mm-hmm. So when we say we deserve it, why do we deserve it? And they would say, well, I guess because I'm kind. And people would say, I'm loving. I'm good to my family. I'm hardworking. And anytime I heard those things, I thought, this is another trap. Yeah. Because now all we're doing is trying to find these areas of life where we really excel as reasons for loving ourselves. Yeah. Well, what about the days where you're not kind? What about the days where you're selfish? What about the days where you are apathetic and you don't work hard? What about the days where you said something that hurt your family? What those days are the days where, I don't know about you, but I need self-love the most. But if you're telling me we should love ourselves because of all these great qualities, what do I do on the days where I'm not showing them? So it felt to me just like another example of showing the kid at school love anytime they got an A and saying, this is why you're worthy of love, because you're all of these things. So, and not only that, but even on our best days, it invites comparison with other people, because there are people harder working than you. There are people kinder than you. There are people better who do more for their families or their community or whatever. So does that mean they're more worthy of love than you are? And people are like, no, that can't be true. So then I have to go back to basics again and say, okay, so why, on what basis do we love ourselves if it's not for our qualities? And then someone would say something like, well, we should love ourselves because we're special. And I'd be like, here we go again. What makes us special? There are 8 billion of us on Earth. What makes us special? Isn't everyone special? And people would be like, yes. I'd go, okay, well, I don't know about you, but if everyone's special, I don't feel very special anymore. I'd feel like I'm 1 in 8 billion. And not to mention, however special I keep telling myself I am, there's people with all sorts of genetic marvels walking around who are the most beautiful people on Earth. There are athletes who have incredible DNA and are, you know, dominating sports whose bodies look different to mine. There are people with amazing brains who make achieving look far easier than it's ever been for me. Like, I really like their version of special, you know? It's like if you're on a dating app and everyone keeps telling you you're special, you're like, how does that help me if I'm invisible and no one's messaging me? That I don't feel special. Other people don't seem to see that I'm special. So I don't really feel that special. So I started to look more deeply into this and say, our love for ourselves has to come from somewhere else. This isn't going to work. It's almost like we're trying to love ourselves the way that we fall in love with other people romantically.
You're listening to The Jen Gottlieb Show.
That is so powerful and so interesting. And this is, I love this concept, because I think that today, especially with social media and with the dating apps and with the likes and the views, and like we get very attached to comparing ourselves to other people, we do put a lot of our self-love and worthiness on our achievements and our accomplishments. Mm-hmm. And like we're searching for that next double tap or that next match or that next person to tell us we're good enough. And that can take us on a really, really bad path, because the second that doesn't appear anymore, it's like, oh, I hate myself. And so then we're on this roller coaster. So I'm waiting for the answer. Like, what is the answer?
Well, the first answer is that the romantic model doesn't work for falling in love with yourself. You're not going to... We fall in love with other people quite easily sometimes, because there's an element of mystery and we see all of their good qualities and we want to get closer to them. And, you know, it kind of feels like... It's like we don't have to try to fall in love with someone. We're just like, oh my God, I just want to be around you all the time. There's a chemical thing going on for us. But when it comes to ourselves, that won't work. Why won't it work? Well, we've been around ourselves our whole life. We are quite bored of this person that we've woken up with and gone to bed with every day forever. You know, if familiarity breeds contempt... Mm-hmm. Then with ourselves, what other emotion is there even room for when we're over all of the good things about us and we know every mistake we've ever made, every awful thing we've ever done, every way we've ever... We're too close to ourselves. So it's no surprise we feel so much contempt for ourselves. So then we have to say, okay, romantic model's not going to work. What's another model for self-love that could work? And I started exploring the parent-child relationship to begin with and looking at that and going, what's different about that relationship than the way that we fall in love? Well, if you ask a parent, why do you love your child? They'll give you a strange look. What they don't do is say, well, because they got an A in math last week and because they did this really cute thing this morning and because they look so great in their outfit today. When you ask a parent, why do you love your child? The general answer is first looking at you like you're a crazy person for even posing such a question. And then saying, what are you talking about? I love them because they're my child. They're mine. Mm-hmm. He's my son. She's my daughter. What are you, What are you talking about?
It's almost an insult.
It's a crazy question.
Yeah.
That, for me, left a clue as to what self-love could be. I looked for that model in other places, and you can find it in other interesting places. You can find it with a child and a stuffed toy. Like, if you say to a child with their stuffed toy, do you, you know, this, hey, you know your rabbit that is like missing an ear and is dirty and has been dropped in 1,000 puddles? I will exchange it for this expensive brand new rabbit. That child will be like, what are you talking about? This is my rabbit. I don't want that rabbit. I want my rabbit.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the qualities of that rabbit. It's just that that child has decided what that rabbit means to him or her. Mm-hmm. You see that with people's pets. There are some really ugly dogs around.
Totally. Like, I have three and they're not the cutest.
If you say to someone with an ugly dog, do you want a more handsome, stately dog? Do you want this pedigree? They'll be like, what are you talking about? This is my dog.
Yes.
So when we look at that, we go, okay, if in these relationships, people don't need to love the qualities of this thing, they have just decided that they have a special relationship with this thing, this person, this pet, this stuffed animal. How does that translate to self-love? Well, okay, there's 8 billion people on this earth. Now, firstly, let's just establish this. If you say that you are a people lover, and that you are a kind person generally, then you have to extend that to yourself. If for no other reason, then you are a person in the room. Mm-hmm. So if you say you love people, in this room right now, we have Corey, mm-hmm. we have you, we have me. Now, I often don't count me. I'm like, right. Oh, there's you and Corey. I don't think of me in that equation. I think of myself just as a sort of pair of eyes looking out onto the world.
Totally.
But I'm a person in the room. So whatever kindness and decency I would extend to you two, at the very least, I should extend to myself. There's no special reason I should treat this human worse than any other human in the room. That alone will change the way most people treat themselves. But we actually have to go a step further than that. Again, borrowing from the parent-child relationship. Of the 8 billion people on this earth, you are only person who is charged with taking care of the human that is you. No one else on earth has that job. It's just yours. And the fact that it's only your job means that you're the only one who has this special relationship with this human. It's as if at birth you were given a human.
I heard you say this and I had goosebumps all over. And I want everyone that's listening to this right now to just stop what you're doing and really pay attention. I've never heard it spoken about like that, but it's so true. My job is to just take care of me. I'm my human.
You're human. And that's it breaks my heart, honestly, when I think about it, because most of us have never realized that that's our job. We were brought into this world and then we were raised by someone or multiple people whose job it was to keep us alive mm-hmm. for a period of time. And they may or may not have done a good job of nurturing you and being there for you, but it, for a time, good or bad, someone else had the job of keeping you alive. What we weren't told, most of us, is that at a certain age, the responsibility for taking care of this human is now over to us. Mm-hmm. It's as if we should have had someone say to us, hey, just so you know, your job, you have one job now, from now till the day you die. You may take on other jobs as well.
Right.
You may choose to have children, but no matter what, your one job that you will always have is to take care of this human, to try to give them the best life possible, to support them, to encourage them, to stand up for them, to just do as much as you can to help this human enjoy this life and to be all that they can be. So when you look at it like that and you imagine someone saying to you, why do you love yourself? you can imagine saying back, what are you talking about? I'm mine. Mm-hmm. I'm my human. What? Why? That's why I love myself. I'm mine. And what that does is it turns loving ourselves from a feeling that we think we're supposed to have into a verb. It's an action. It's an approach. Loving ourselves, you don't even need to like yourself to love yourself. Liking yourself can come later. And often in the parent-child relationship, many of the benefits of that relationship come later when that child is an adult and that child goes on to realize just how many things that parent did for them mm-hmm. that they never realized at the time. Well, right now, if we've not taken care of this human for a while and we've not engaged with them, we might be raising a teenager, yeah. even at 60 years old. And that we may not appreciate all the things we're doing for ourselves today, but it doesn't matter. We can't abandon our post. Anytime I have been running myself into the ground and facing burnout and being unkind to myself and I'm in a bad place, I think to myself, Matthew, you had one job. Where have you been? Yeah. That changes the game because it takes loving ourselves to a it turns loving ourselves into something we all know how to do. Mm-hmm. And we can all relate to that idea that, oh my God, I'm my person. When we think of comparison with other people through that lens makes no sense.
Right.
What does it matter if this person's better looking or they have a better body or they make more money or they have a better life or they're more talented than me or they're more funny or witty or charismatic or... What does it matter? I can't exchange my human for another human. So worrying about how great any other human is absolutely irrelevant. All I have to work with is this human. So my job isn't to compare this human to other humans. My job is just to give this human the best life I possibly can. What would that look like? And that then becomes self-love.
And when you bring that into the dating space or into your relationship, what happens differently?
Well, firstly, you change the rules on who you say no to. That's because right. You go, if my job is to take care of this human, I wouldn't let someone like this around them. This was my child. I wouldn't let someone else, if someone's abusive, if someone's treating them poorly, if someone's making them feel like they're not good enough or not mm-hmm. accepting them or making them feel unsafe, you know, making them feel like they're not good enough. I'm not going to have that person be around this human that I'm taking care of. No way. So it changes the standard for who you let into your life, which is already a massive, massive change.
I want to talk about standards. You talk about standards a lot in the book. I had a question for you specifically about this because I had a lot of people around me when I was dating that said that my standards were too high, that I was too picky, that I was not, you know, I would like go out with someone that someone would set me up with and I'd be like, no, 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 not for me. Or like I would be really, really, really particular and had very high standards. People would say you need to lower your standards. And I know that there are people out there saying that to other people and people that are dating that are just like so hyper picky. What do you say about that? Like, where's the threshold?
I think we need to raise our standards about certain... I actually think what's interesting is many people have really high standards for things that don't matter and terribly low standards for things that do.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So like they'll be picky about the fact that this person's not quite as tall as they would like or that this person doesn't quite have the style that I like, or that this person, I don't like this thing on their dating profile. But meanwhile, they'll date someone for 2 years who treats them like crap, who they've decided is the right style and charisma mm-hmm. and sexiness and whatever. And that person treats them like crap, treats them as disposable, picks them up, puts them down, you know, is completely inconsistent with their communication, says they're not ready for a relationship, or says I'm confused, I don't know what I want.
Why do we do that? Why do we do that? Because there's this person that will treat you amazingly, that is so wonderful and loving, and for some reason, we just that person's not perfect on paper, or maybe it's because of what other people will think of us if we date that person. Does that play into it?
Well, yeah, I think there's a big ego element to dating that hurts us, where we think that someone isn't, they don't look the part that our friends or our family or our community would think mm-hmm. we would go for, or even what we've decided is the blueprint for what this person, the person I end up with, is going to look like or be like. You know, we've defined this package in our head of what we're looking for, and very few of those things have anything to do with what's going to make us happy. It just has to do with a kind of a type that we've predetermined, and if someone doesn't quite fit that type, then we judge them, or we have contempt for them, or we decide that they're not right for us before we even give someone a chance. So I do think that's a big problem. And we attract what is familiar to us. There are many reasons we go for people who are bad for us. I list them all in a chapter called Never Satisfied mm-hmm. in this book. But one of them is the scarcity mindset. We're worried no one better is going to come along, or yep. no one's going to come along at all. Yep. Another reason is because it's what we know. Lack of consistency might be something that's very familiar to us. Yeah. And maybe we grew up with it. Maybe we grew up with parents who turned on and off the tap of attention and love. And we, you know, have this core, you know, issue with abandonment. Or, but what we learned was that's what love felt like. Love feels like this roller coaster. And so someone comes along and makes us feel that, and it feels kind of familiar. It feels like something our nervous system is used to. And I think a key principle for people to understand is that we don't tend to gravitate towards what makes us happy. We gravitate towards what is comfortable. Mm-hmm. And what is comfortable can be terrible.
Yeah.
It could be hell, but it's what we know.
Get outside of your comfort zone and into your best life one small step at a time.
If someone's listening to this right now and they're leaning in and they're like, I do this. Mm-hmm. I do this. Every relationship that I'm in is something that I'm comfortable with. It's a repetition of something that I grew up with. And I don't even know where to set my standards. Like, what's the first step that someone could take to really understand and know what is right for them, or what patterns they need to break in order to move forward and find that real love?
I think first understanding that at the very least, what we can observe is that there are people out there who seem to be having a different experience than we are. That there are people out there who seem to be in loving, kind, loyal relationships mm-hmm. that seem to be a genuine team. And if that is out there, then what's going on that I'm not experiencing that? Whatever we grew up with or got used to, either in formative relationships or from our parents or caregivers, it became our norm. And I talk about it like a dolphin in captivity. If a dolphin gets taught to jump through hoops for fish and do backflips and that humans will feed you, then when you release the dolphin into the ocean, you can't blame it for doing all of the same tricks to get right. food, even though they're entirely irrelevant in the ocean.
Yeah.
Right. And by the way, it doesn't mean that dolphin has like some irreversible self-worth problem. It just right. is doing what it knows.
Yes.
Right. And that's a big, I think sometimes self-worth is a big subject, but sometimes we look at everything right. through the lens of self-worth right. instead of looking at things also through the lens of habit and territory that we've already mapped. Mm. And so that what we've experienced, and by the way, when we experienced it in the tank, in our tank, we didn't know it was a tank. We just thought that's mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. That's how things are. And we wired our nervous system in response to that.
Yeah.
You know how many times in life I've been on time for something and in a peaceful place, and then I do one more thing that I didn't even need to do that makes me late.
Yeah.
And now I'm rushing and I'm like, I'm going to have to get there in time and I'm going to be late. And the problem is that energy in my life has been something that has been normal for me for a long time, ever since I was growing up. I got taught that chaotic energy. So even though I don't, I say I don't like it, and I'm like, oh God, it's so stressful when I'm in a rush and I hate being late. And I, even though I say I hate it, there's something about it that is like familiar.
Yeah, and you subconsciously attract it.
Yeah,
you do it's
a
things.
Bit of a, yeah, I like make myself late and it's a bit of a rush and it's a bit of a like, you know, like now I've got to make it on time. And it, we do that in all sorts of areas of our life. And when something comes along that isn't like that, when someone comes along and they have a different energy to that, let's say in love, someone comes along who is straightforward. We may not know what to do with that energy. It might be entirely unfamiliar to us. I had a friend I write about in the book who dated a guy that was really awful to her. And then right after that guy, she started dating a guy that was just very, very kind. And she said, her mum asked her, like, how's it going? And she said, it's so weird, mum. He's so nice to me. And her mum said, that's how it's supposed to be. But for her, it felt strange. It didn't present as initially like really great. It just presented as weird.
Yeah.
Because it, that's not what she was used to. So what we have to do is say, to, in answer to your question, okay, other people are having a different experience than me. Why do I keep having my experience? The race car driver Mario Andretti said, as a tip for race car driving, don't look at the wall. The car goes where your eyes go. So don't look at the wall.
Right.
But when I heard that, I thought this isn't like just a throwaway, interesting kind of like motivational line. It really deeply resonated with me because I came to realize more and more in my life, there were areas where I just kept crashing into the wall and not consciously knowing what was going on, what was happening here that I kept crashing into the wall. Why is this my experience over and over again and not other people's experience over and over again? And when you start becoming aware that what is happening, the results you're getting in your life are your wall. You may not know it's the wall because like I said, you if you get close enough to the wall all the time, you don't think it's a wall. You just think it's the world. You just think that's life. But the more I became aware that these results I was getting were my wall, the more I realized, oh my God, I am, there's something I'm doing. There's something, some way I'm going through life that keeps attracting this same thing. Like I grew up, I came out of childhood with a lot of hypervigilance. And that's been something that's been a constant battle in my life, still a battle today. And it comes from, you know, different aspects of childhood. And
like, give me an example of hypervigilance in your life right now.
Mine is like, if my wife comes home, like, and I'm asleep, if she's gone out with her friends and I'm asleep, like, when she comes through the bedroom door, I shoot up as if, like, something, some terrible threat.
Got it. You're always on edge.
Yeah, I'm like, who's here? Like, it's not like, I'm not chill, like, oh, there she is, come get me. Like, I'm like, immediately there's danger because I heard a door.
Right.
And that has translated in all sorts of ways in my life. You know, I tell a story in the book about being in a bar in Japan with my brothers. And my brother, you know, belting out Hey Ya on the karaoke machine and everyone having a good time and me having a good time, but also like scanning the room constantly for threats and having this, it's like this internal public service announcement that we're not okay. We need to constantly watch ourselves. Anything bad can happen at any time. Like, we're not safe. And there was another Westerner who was staring at my brother singing constantly, just looking. And like, because of my hypervigilance, I'm like, I spot that guy immediately. And then I can't take my eyes off this person. And now there's this whole story emerging in my head about what's about to happen and how it's all going to kick off and how I need to get involved before it kicks off. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, anyone who knows me knows I'm not a violent person. I don't like fighting is something I do for fun in my spare time with boxing and jujitsu. But the idea of me actually going and fighting someone is not me at all. I am the opposite. I want nothing but peace and fun with people I love and for everyone to feel good and safe.
It's just all happening in your head.
It's all, and I'm, because I don't want it to happen.
Right.
And because I'm thinking about it and because I'm hypervigilant for it, I'm looking for the situation that I'm afraid of. I'm looking for the situation that I don't want to happen. Right. So I ended up walking over to the person and confronting them.
You're looking at the wall.
I'm literally walking straight up to the wall.
Yes.
And creating a wall where there probably,
oh my gosh,
may not have even been one.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a way that wasn't polite, asked this person if everything was okay. And that agitated him, mm-hmm, because he could feel my tone. And the person behind the bar, who embarrassingly knew who I was and was a fan of my videos and my work, she came running from behind the bar and was like, no, like, what is this? No, you over there. Like, and my brother came up to me and he was like, what are you doing? And I went, you don't understand. This was happening. Like, and now I'm mad at my brothers because I'm like, you know, just blissfully unaware, living your best life, not aware that there's violence about to come. Like, I'm like, how do you survive without me? That's what's going through my head. How do they get by? But it dawned on me that they don't find themselves in situations like that because they're not looking at the wall, at least not that wall. They've got their own wall.
Right.
But that's my wall. And so they go out and they don't find themselves in situations like that. Whereas I'm looking for that danger everywhere. And if you keep looking for the wall, you will find it somewhere.
Yeah.
You will find it. I had a woman I coached who said to me, I've been dating this guy. He's a really great guy. We've had fun. He's been great. Like, she had nothing bad to say about him. She said, but we haven't spoken in days. And it's really triggered me and it's upset me. And I feel like sad about the whole thing. And I said, well, what happened? She said, well, he was having a little get together with his friends on Saturday afternoon and he didn't invite me. And it really upset me. And during the day, I texted him and I said, why didn't you invite me? And he said, I'm so sorry. I haven't seen these friends in a while. It was just, you know, I just planned to get together, but can I call you later? Which is a reasonable thing to say. And by the way, when he called her, she could have explained how it had made her feel.
Yeah.
But she didn't do that. When he said, can I call you later? She said, don't bother. And he didn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, she
and now she's speaking to me saying, I'm so upset. I feel like this always happens to me. I really like this person. I got upset because I felt like he didn't invite me because he didn't like me as much as I like him. And now he's not texting me at all. And I look at that and I go, this is a person, from everything I'd spoken to her about, this was a person with real, like a real abandonment wound.
Yeah.
And so for her, it's all going well. And then all of a sudden she doesn't get invited to this little gathering with his friends. And it deeply affected her. Now, if you take that example as, okay, someone's in a pattern, like you said, what mm-hmm. can they do? How can they even begin to change that? Well, firstly, when she felt triggered by that situation, the first thing that's important is, talking of self-love, okay, my human is hurting right now. Something about this has really, really affected them. That sucks.
Yeah.
That's really hard for her. And this must be very deep stuff, because if I had control over this, if I had a light switch to not feel bad about this, I would just hit that switch. But I don't. This is an involuntary, painful response. So this is deep. This comes from way back in my life, and it's still affecting me today. And while it may not be real in this situation, the feeling I have was real at one point. There was a point in my life where this was real.
Right.
And I'm still reacting to that time when it was real. So instead of calling myself crazy, which I'm not, let me give myself maximum self-compassion right now. Because if this was easy to change, like me shooting up in bed when like my very harmless wife walks through the door, if that was easy to change, we would have done it already. So these are deep things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, compassion. That will instantly ease up some of that pain. Because now instead of beating ourselves up for feeling this way, we actually start to feel loved and accepted for who we are.
Yeah.
By ourselves. Then we might say, okay, what would I normally do in this situation? Okay, I would text him and I would say, why didn't you invite me? And then when he texted back, instead of being vulnerable, I would say, don't bother. And the walls would go up and I'd push someone away. Okay, that's what I normally do. What if I were applying curiosity to this situation? Like, how might it go if I did something a little different than I normally would? And it almost doesn't matter if the different thing that you do produces the desired result.
Right.
It just matters that it gets you a different result than you normally get. Because just getting a result that's different from what you normally get is like inception. It plants an idea in your mind that the way you've told yourself life is only the reality that you've been living so far.
Yes.
There are other realities that other people are living, because when they get to the fork in the road of where you say, don't bother, they take a right turn and do this. And that right turn that they take at that fork in the road creates a very different result for them. Different is good, because different is possibility.
Yes.
And then you start to turn into a little bit of an experimenter in your own life, where it starts to become a little exciting, because you start to go, how many different ways are there to live this life? I've been telling myself this is the only way to live this life, but what if he said, can I call you later? And I tried getting on the phone and saying, hey, you know, probably you didn't do anything wrong, but today I got hurt.
Can we talk about, I want to dive into this a little bit deeper, because in the book you talk about asking the scary questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there are a lot of people that I talk to that are dating right now that are petrified to ask certain questions because they don't want to seem clingy, or they don't want to rock the boat, or they don't want to sound like they like them too much, right? There's so much confusion if you should ask or if you should say something like in that situation. That's a really scary thing to say if you just started dating someone not too long ago. Like, okay, well, this hurt me. Does that make you look unattractive? Are they going to ghost? And I know that people have had that experience where they've spoken their truth, they said something, and then that person never responds again.
Yep.
I want to hear your take on this.
So there's obviously a time, it would be disingenuous to say that there's not a time in the process where we shouldn't give that to someone else as their kind of thing to have to deal with, because we really don't know them that well yet. So I'm a big advocate for having people in your life you can be really honest with, and not like tell them, well, you won't believe what he did. He had this event and he didn't invite me and it was so rude, but just give them the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if I'm right or wrong here. All I know is this really hurt and it sucked. If you can tell that to someone you trust, they'll often be able to look at it and say, Well, I think there's probably more going on there for you, because I think on the surface, it doesn't necessarily read as there being anything wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But why don't you take an approach of just letting it unfold first and seeing where it goes? See if you feel consistency from that person from this point on, or see if, you know, that experience repeats itself. But I think having people in your life who can give you truth instead of just reinforce what you're saying. Yeah, that is annoying. Why didn't he invite you? Blah, blah, blah. Like, mm-hmm. Those are dangerous friends.
Yeah.
You need people who are happy to lovingly, compassionately give you some objectivity in the situation, which also doesn't mean telling you what you want to hear either. It's not, oh, he likes you so much, don't worry. Like, that's also a lie.
Yeah.
Because you don't know that. But you might be able to talk to someone who doesn't give you the sugar-coated version or the back you up in all of your trauma version, but just is able to bring you some truth, some objectivity, and slow you down a little bit and slow down the story in your mind, because there's a lot of story happening rapidly.
We tell a zillion stories. Mm-hmm. We create an entire story. I know I created like an entire, like, I guess you like a chapter book with people that didn't really exist for a long time when I was dating. And I see my friends do it now too.
Yeah.
And you can start to say things that just sabotage the relationship before it even starts based on the story in your head. And I know you talk a lot about telling a story in the book.
Yeah.
How do we prevent ourselves from doing that so we're not sabotaging relationships? And then at the same time, I also want you to get into the red flags we need to look out for when we do actually like have that friend that says like, listen, look at this objectively. We come to it like really responsibly, and we aren't reacting, and we're actually just speaking our truth, and that person ghosts, takes off. When do we know like, okay, I need to end this now, and how do we have the courage to do that?
Well, I think firstly, it's possible to communicate that something affected you without making it the other person's fault, but saying like, this is a pattern in my life that I'm working on, because it's sometimes hard for me and it's something I'm trying to work on. You're not making that someone else's problem. You're just letting them in.
Right.
And I think that can be a beautiful thing to do. And I think that can actually be the kind of vulnerability that is very attractive. It allows them to feel connected to you. And also, frankly, is attractive because very often when people do feel vulnerable or triggered, they do make it our fault. But if instead you're like, this affected me and I don't want to make that your responsibility because it might be my stuff, but I just wanted to share it with you. That is very attractive, because when someone hears that, they're like, whoa, you're different to other people. Mm-hmm. Other people have just made that about me or have just come at me in really unhealthy ways. If this is the way you resolve your things, then this is already really attractive. So I wouldn't underestimate the value of just sharing without making something somebody else's problem, unless you really feel like they've done something wrong, which is different. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong also with, you know, sometimes I think we hold back too much to where we're afraid of being high maintenance or difficult or scaring someone off. So we don't even state our basic needs. Mm-hmm. Like you could go on a date with someone, and if it was a great date and you don't hear from them for 2 weeks afterwards, and then they all of a sudden come back and are like, do you want to do something this weekend? Well, it's not high maintenance to point out that you had a really great date last time, but you were surprised you didn't hear from them.
But so many people are afraid to do that.
Because we are mirroring instead of modeling. Mm. We mirror other people's behavior, thinking that that's the smart move.
Yeah.
That, well, if they're not texting me, I won't text them.
Right.
And then when they come back and they say, do you want to do something? I'm like, oh, I don't want to let them know that affected me, that they didn't text me. So instead, I'm just going to be chill now and be like, yeah, I'm good. What's going on with you? And it's like such a, it really backfires because it shows no intentionality. It actually tacitly approves that behavior. So
definitely.
And it says to them, there's zero consequences to going off the radar. So what we thought was us being cool, chill, right, like
go with
unaffected,
the flow.
is actually doing the opposite of all the things we want it to do. You're mirroring someone's like casual minimum investment behavior. I call it the MPI, mm-hmm. the person who puts in the minimum possible investment just to keep
the
you
MPI.
Engaged.
Yes.
But like we think we're doing the right thing by mirroring their lack of investment, when actually what we should be doing is modeling the kind of behavior we would like to see. Now, what does that look like? Well, it's almost like if someone doesn't text you, but you say, hey, you know, I hope you're having a great day today, or, you know, I was thinking of you this morning, I hope you have a great day today. Like, that's a little bit of modeling, mm-hmm. because it's a little bit of, it's a little vulnerable. You've been proactive, mm-hmm. and you're really doing it because, or you're really doing it knowing that you're going to see if they meet you there. Mm-hmm. So I'm modeling what I want to see from you.
Right.
Do you meet me there? Now, the problem is if we keep doing that, even though they don't meet us there. Mm-hmm. And by the way, meeting us there isn't they texted back. It's they texted back and
asked you
next day, they then sent you a message, yes. and were like, hey, what are you up to today? That would be them meeting you there. But there's a lot of people who's like, why do they keep texting back every time I text them if they're not into me? And it's like, well, they're just reacting. But that doesn't mean you, in order to see what you really have with a person, you have to see if they can do the same as you're doing, not if they can just respond to your pings to them. So you could do that. If you keep texting with someone and it's not evolving, or it's just like you're a bit sick and tired of the texting, leave them a voice note. Let them hear your voice. Let them hear a little like fun or playfulness or flirtatiousness or whatever in your voice, and see if that like just a like 1%, 2% more intimacy gives them that, like makes them upgrade the way they're talking and communicating with you. These little moments where you model are the moments where you become a leader in your love life instead of a follower. And that's a big thing. It's very easy for us to complain about dating culture these days. And that, trust me, there's never ending things to complain about. It's not that people are wrong when they complain. It's just that I think it can miss the point a little bit, which is that Mitch Albom said, if you don't like the culture, you have to be brave enough to create your own.
That's so good.
And if you don't like the culture in dating right now, create your own. Don't follow that culture. Go into it as a leader. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what we do in business, right? Yeah. We see how other businesses are doing the thing that we want to do. And we go, what's my way of doing this? How do I want to do this that has my thumbprint on it? And you get to, that's what's so creative about having being an entrepreneur and starting a company, is that you get to put your thumbprint on it. You get to do it in a way that's you.
You're speaking my language. I always say there's no right or wrong way, just your way.
Your way. And that's an act of creation, yeah. that you get to do that. That's so wonderful. It's why often you'll find people want to work for you, is because there's something about your culture and your way of doing it that they really resonate with. So they want to work for you, not the company down the street. Sometimes they want to work for you, not the company that's offering them a third more pay. Yeah. Because there's something about the way you're doing it that speaks to them. They like the culture. Well, why is our love life any different? Why are we going into our love life as followers, mirroring the poor behavior of everyone else, instead of going in as a leader and saying, what do I want this to be? What do I want this experience to be for me? How do I set that tone? How do I set the tone for the level of connection or vulnerability that I want to see? How do I set the tone for the fact that I actually kind of like phone calls and not wait for someone to call me, but maybe do something that at least sets the tone for I'm okay with phone calls. In fact, I like them.
Yeah.
How do you do that? Then you start to become like, this is where it's kind of advanced in a way, but it's where you really get to start to shape your reality in your love life, mm-hmm. is people see that and it stands out.
Yeah.
It's like, what's this?
This is like the secret sauce. This is like, this is really where it gets, it's, but it also is difficult to do this because it's a very courageous act to
do. Yeah, it is. And we underestimate our power. We underestimate the impact that we can have in the way that we are. And that's the, you know, I would love for people, I invite people to start to understand that in any room, you are this little ball of energy that affects the energy of the room.
Yes.
And you can make a difference in that room by the way that you show up. It's amazing. It's that don't realize the power we have to influence people around us.
Which of the three forms of confidence would you say that is? Because I know you talk about the three parts. I love the way you talk about confidence, by the way. I've never heard it talked about the way that you speak about it. And walking into a room and being that ball of energy and like really owning who you are and having that self-love, like this is my human, I don't care. Like we all want to have that. Mm-hmm. It's a really courageous act to walk into a room and have that.
Well, I think it starts on the deep. So there are, I talk about this later in the book. I have two big chapters on confidence. And for anyone who wants to read that formula for self-love over and over again until it sticks, it's all in the book. There are three levels of confidence: the surface, the identity, and the core. Now that what I just talked about earlier with self-love is the core. That's the deepest, deepest level of confidence. Now, the surface is how we come across to people, right? The surface for me right now is how I'm using my voice, how I'm moving my hands, how I'm sitting, my ability to string sentences together and thoughts and ideas and how I'm coming across. Now, all of us have our own kind of unique way of being on the surface. And on the identity level is all the things that give us confidence and the things that we identify with. We play the piano. We are good at our career. We speak two languages. We have a great circle of friends. We have a house that we bought that we really love. Whatever it may be, you know, we're good at dancing or we're good at singing. Or there's all these things on the identity level. And the funny thing is, the more we accept ourselves at the core, the more we can unconditionally accept who we are today, the more that DNA of who we are can actually come across. Because I'm not now trying to be something that I think you're like. Mm-hmm. I'm just truly expressing myself and the kind of unique DNA of my interests, my idiosyncrasies, my way of thinking about life, my way of showing up. And that's, like, if you take content online, the best content tends to be the when someone is really leaning into the essence of
always
who they are and what is, you know, their kind of way of thinking, their way of going through life. And there's something highly, highly attractive and infectious about someone who is intensely who they are, who's being the, you know, when you're being the youest you, it's really infectious because we all want to be, you know, the usest us. we all want to be that for ourselves. We want to be that much ourselves. And when we see someone else doing it, it feels like it's like giving us permission to do the same.
Slip.
Yeah, it's like that's how I want to be in life, and we want to be like people who are like how we want to be, or we want to be around people who are like how we want to be. So, you know, I've been on this journey for many years with my own content, where I just feel the more I lean into just me and who I am and the way I think, and I kind of enjoy the unique aspects of that, or the things that are just, the more I connect with people and the more you find your people. There's a great book called On Writing Well by William Zinsser. Mm-hmm. And he talks about how there are you know, one of the problems with writers is that they, you know, a writer could be writing about Tokyo and they're like defeated before they even start because they're like, God, Tokyo's been written about 1,000 times. Yeah. What do I have to say about Tokyo that hasn't already been said? And he says, we need you to talk about your version of Tokyo because we've never heard it before. It, you know, only you can give your thoughts on Tokyo. And there's something freeing about that when you realize you're the only person that can really deliver your perspective, your history, the, you know, unique set of combinations that have made you the thing that is you. That takes time, I think, to accept yourself and then to understand that leaning into that actually is your superpower.
100%. That was when everything changed for me, when I had to start being seen as who I really was. And I want to acknowledge you because I've seen the evolution happen with you.
You have.
Massive. Mm. And I'm loving this conversation, like at the apex of like this moment where you're just like, this is me. And your heart's out there and you're just being completely you. And I feel that. And I saw the evolution of your work and the evolution of how you showed up. And I'm so like, I love it when people can just be exactly who they are because you're giving permission to others to be exactly who they are. And that is your superpower. And you are doing that. And you did that with this book. And like, you're totally cool with sitting here and telling me like, yeah, back when I started, I was miserable. I didn't know who I was. I was behind the scenes, not being who I was. I felt like an imposter, all of these things. And it just takes unbelievable amounts of courage to be able to communicate like the way that you communicate now. And it's so cool. And I know that so many people are going to learn so much from this conversation and just learning from you and the way that you share your story and your information and just how humble you are. And you're like, this is it. This is who I am. And like, I'm not perfect and I don't have it all together and I'm never going to come on here and tell everybody what they should do. Like, bravo.
Thank you so much.
Bravo.
I feel very seen.
Well, I see you.
No, I feel very seen.
I absolutely do.
I really appreciate that. I it's lovely that you see that and it's been a road to get there.
I know.
You know, it's a lot of, my God, a lot of not accepting myself, a lot of, you know, I think when we're trying to maintain an image, we don't share things about ourselves and it's a real barrier to everything, really. It's a barrier to being accepted by others. We deprive ourselves from a deeper connection with people who, you know, we've discovered are not entirely scared off by knowing these things. Some will be. And that's always
the case.
And
that's okay.
That's always the case, is that someone, you'll tell a story and someone will go, ugh, that's okay. But you really do. It's the secret to finding your people. And then with those people, having a level of connection that is like nothing you've ever had before. And I also think that it's the key to growth because you can't, it's really hard to grow when you're not being honest about where you are. It's like telling someone you have 100 grand in the bank when really you have 100 grand of debt. And even if you work really hard and pay off half of that, you still don't feel like you did anything because everyone thinks you have 100 grand. But actually, you should celebrate that. You should be able to feel proud. You should be like, oh, man, I paid off half my debt. That's amazing. But you can't celebrate and no one can celebrate for you because you're still in people's minds somewhere you're not. And, you know, I see that a lot with people who come out of relationships or divorce where they're, you know, it's very common for people to not want to tell their community. That it is, you know, you see people, I've seen couples show up to parties together who, you know, they're done.
Yeah.
But they show up because one or both of them want to maintain the image that everything's okay. And they're so afraid of what their community will think if they have to admit that this relationship they've been in, this marriage they've been in for the last 20 years has actually been in a really bad spot for a while, or that the husband cheated you know, 3 years ago, and they've been trying to hold it together and too ashamed to tell anyone. But now it's like truly hit a point where she had to leave, but they're still showing up to the party together. Like it's, and the tragedy of that is that when you make an inch of progress, when everyone knows exactly where you are, and then you make an inch of progress, it's the best.
Yeah.
You could celebrate that because you're like, look what I did. This was hard won. But you can't feel that. That should give you confidence, but mm-hmm. you can't feel that boost in your confidence when there's still a disparity between what we're projecting and what we feel. And so we rob ourselves of a chance to enjoy our progress when we're constantly trying to show that we're over here when actually we're still struggling with these things over here. So I don't know. It's hard.
And it's exhausting. It's exhausting to keep up with those lies. It's a lot really, easier to be yourself.
It's a lot easier, but it's intensely uncomfortable in the beginning. And, you know, I've gotten better at it over the years. My wife has certainly helped. I feel like she has been so healing for me and so corrective for me because I learned what it was to be accepted on a level I felt I'd never been accepted before. And that made me braver, you know. But it's hard. Even with this book, I know most of the world hasn't read it yet at the time this is coming out. And so I'm a little, I'm a bit scared. I feel exposed, you know, I feel a bit naked. And
what are you most afraid of?
I think it's just unknown territory. It's the feeling of just, especially doing it at scale. I want to say a lot of people, but I'll make it about me. There's a fear of being misrepresented or people, you know, when you are vulnerable with someone you really trust, you trust them with that information about you. But when you're vulnerable with people you don't know you can trust, that feels very, it can feel very scary. But, you know, I went into this book with one mission, which was to be helpful. And if I felt that sharing something would be helpful to women or to men, I was like, I want to, as much as I can without invading my own privacy, I want to share what I think will actually will be helpful to people. So that's what I've tried to do. And I'm genuinely very, very, more than I'm spooked by being vulnerable, I'm very, very excited for, I'm just very excited for people to read this. I really believe it's like the most direct and honest thing I've written for people in their love life. And I think people will find in this book, there's nothing in it that is, you know, it's not painting an unrealistic picture of how hard it is to find love.
No.
It is hard to find love.
It's so relatable. It's so real. It gives you the step-by-step in every area. We didn't even get into all of it. I mean, there's so much. I could sit here and talk to you all day about breakups and about death and about red flags and about ghosting and about all of like that high level surface stuff that people really want to know about, but then also going deep into confidence and self-love and just being so real about all of it. This is really what's going on.
Yeah.
It is the Bible for people right now. And I know there are a lot of people struggling with this now more than ever because of the dating apps and because of the world that we live in. It's crazy. It's uncharted territories. Mm-hmm. This is the book, y'all. This is the book. Please. I can't recommend this book more and this human more. Like, I just can't. And obviously, I have so many memories with you that you have no idea that I have them. It's kind of weird. It's like, because they're back in the day when you didn't even know me. But I want to end on something. I mean, obviously, we could go on forever, but you guys, you got to get the book and just follow Matthew. And he has so much content on the internet, so you can just listen to him all day if you want to. What would you, Matthew, now, knowing everything that you know and everything that's going on and all of your whole evolution and transformation, if you could go back and talk to 19-year-old Matthew who just started as a dating coach, and just started creating content. I know. Yeah. What would you now say to him if you could give him some advice or anything that you would say if you could sit across from him and talk to him?
I think I would say, I think I know what I would say. I'd say, you don't have to know everything. It's okay to take your time. People will be with you for the journey. They will connect with, you know, you have a gift to give people that runs deeper than what you know. There's a kindness to you, and there's an empathy that is a real gift that you have, and a way of connecting with people and a way of compassionately helping people that is deeper than your knowledge. And so you can actually rely on that more and rely less on thinking you need to have all the answers about what to do or how to answer every question. Just know that there's something about your heart and the way you are that will be healing to people on its own. And you've got the next 20 years to educate yourself and to play catch up with all of these things that you couldn't possibly know yet. And if you try to know them too soon, you'll just be faking it and you'll just be pretending you know more than you do. And that will be great for some people who haven't lived yet. But the people who have really lived will see through it. And they'll see that you don't know much about that thing you're talking about. But they'll, you know, so take your time, and you have gifts that are worth sharing even while you go on your own journey. And if you do that, you'll give yourself the space to grow more quickly and sooner, because you won't have to hide the areas where you're struggling. You won't have to do all of this work in private away from the public eye because you feel shame that the things you're working on are things you're supposed to have already figured out.
I think everybody could take that lesson that you just gave to your younger self. That was a masterclass. Y'all, I mean, get the book right now. I don't know. By the time this is out, I think this will be launch week for you. So you can get it. Where do you want everybody to get it? Where do you want them to go?
We have a website. It's called lovelifebook.com. And on that website, you can buy it from any retailer you want. But the cool thing is I'm doing an event on May the 4th called Find Your Person.
Great.
And it's designed to be a partner to the book. So the book is going to give you that self-awareness. It's going to give you the ideas. It's going to just be a download of so many different ways of thinking about your love life and a fresh approach. But on May the 4th, I'm going to combine that with a real path for people that want to prioritize finding their person in the coming months of their life. It's going to be a great event. It's only for people that get the book. It's not an event people can access any other way.
Okay.
So when you get the book, get your receipt number, wherever you got it from, it doesn't matter, and come back to lovelifebook.com and you can input your receipt number and I'll email you the details and your ticket to the event on May the 4th. So go to lovelifebook.com, order the book, and then come back to that website and get your ticket for the event on May 4th, because everyone's going to be there. Everyone who's got a copy of the book is going to be there on this one day virtually, and I'm going to be live coaching you. So it's going to be really fun.
That's a no-brainer. Go do it right now. Absolute no-brainer. I love that you're giving everybody that has a book an actual invite to take action on the book and like go deeper and be able to coach with you. So cool.
Yeah, well, if you're anything like me, the most growth you get is while you're reading the book. But if you really love a book, if I really love a book, I'll get through it in a week. And the danger of getting through a book in a week is that after that week, I'll put it down. And then every day after that point, I'm getting more and more detached from the lessons
exactly
of that book. So I wanted to give people something that could keep them going.
Yep.
Like if you really enjoy the book and you just like go all the way till the end, there's something that's actually going to keep that momentum going.
I love it. You're my people. I'm so grateful for you.
You've been such a generous host and conversationalist and so kind to me. So thank you. You made me feel really at home.
I'm so glad. That's my goal. Well, oh my gosh, I have some super, super exciting news for you. If you want to be a speaker, if you have ever spoken on stage before and you were like, I absolutely love this, I want to do this for my life, but I have no idea how to get on my very first stage, or you've been speaking and you really just want to leverage that speaking career and grow it and get on more stages, I have the most amazing opportunity for you. I'm going to give you the opportunity to potentially speak on our stage with an audience of 500 people alongside some of the top speakers in the world. We are hosting a competition called Speaking with the Stars at our next Build Your Brand Live event. It's your opportunity to compete with other speakers to get a chance to speak in front of 500 people at our major event alongside people like Jamie Kern Lima, Trent Shelton, Jesse Itzler, me, my husband Chris, and a whole bunch of other amazing celebrity speakers. So if you want to speak, I dare you. I'm going to give you a little personal dare. Step outside your comfort zone and sign up for Speaking with the Stars. All you have to do is grab your ticket, send in a 5-minute video of you speaking about whatever topic you choose, and our judges will choose the top 15. Top 15 speakers are going to get an amazing flyer that you can post on social media saying that you're a finalist, and we will announce the final 6 speakers at the event. Those speakers will get to compete on stage in front of everybody and compete for their chance to win the top speaker of Build Your Brand Live. So if you're leaning in right now, I know you are, I hope you are, because this is a really great opportunity. Grab the link in the show notes, click on it, and go grab your ticket and apply for Speaking with the Stars. I can't wait to see your video, and I hope to see you on the stage. See you there. I'm grateful for you in so many ways. Thank you, Matthew. Everyone go get the book. Love Life, Matthew Hussey. See you next time.